Hey, this is Matt Hawkins, and you're listening to the Top Cow Chronology Project.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. And as you can tell from that voiceover there by Matt Hawkins, this is a Top Cow Thursday episode, and it's another episode of the Top Cow Chronology Project. So for those of you not familiar with the project, it's actually the way we originally kicked off the podcast. There is a user over on the Comic Vine forums or Comic Vine site. It goes by the name of Condor, K-O-N-D-O-R-R, I believe. And he put together a chronological reading order of the Top Cow universe. So it's artifact books like Witchblade, Darkness, Magdalena, Artifacts. There's some crossover with Tomb Raider, which Top Cow had the license to at one point. And at the time, you know, big fan of Top Cow, probably found my way to them through the art of Michael Turner, who's, you know, one of my favorite comic artists of all time. And, you know, he was the original artist on Witchblade. And I remember buying a giant Witchblade omnibus. It's like the first 50 issues or something, and I had it like at a real good deal at a sale at Borders, and I had a gift certificate on top of it and a coupon. It was like I got it for next to nothing, but I never got around to reading it. And you know, I stumbled across this chronology, and I thought, you know what, this would be a great way to finally read this interconnected artifact universe of Top Cow, using this reading order that this guy Condor put together. So we thank him for that. And I thought, okay, you know, here we go. Starts way back when in ancient Egypt and goes all the way up through present. So the books aren't in order in the reading order, in the order they're published in any way, shape, or form. They're in the order that they would be read as if, you know, this was a real universe that, you know, time moved in one direction from the past to the present and on into the future. So I will put a link in the show notes. You can go and check out the chronology yourself if you want to catch up to where we are or look ahead to the future. And as I mentioned, some of the books are Tomb Raider books, and they were listed as optional in the chronology, and I went back and forth on whether or not to read them because, as I said, Top Cow no longer has the license to Tomb Raider. It's actually over at Dark Horse now, but just for the sake of being complete, we decided to go ahead and read them, and we're on the Journeys series right now. It's a 12-issue limited series, and honestly, it hasn't been of that high quality, and that's part of the reason why I kind of fell off the bandwagon. Some of these issues are really hard to get through, but at the same time, there are other issues like 9 and 10, which I'm going to be talking about in this episode, that are really, really good. So it's just unfortunate that the series has been a little inconsistent, both in story and art. So let me go ahead and dive into issue 9. First, the creative team. It's written as all the issues have been by Fiona Kai Avery. Pencils for this particular issue are by Manny Clark. The inks are by Marlo Alcueza and Sal Regla. And colors by Brian Buccioletto, Beth Sotelo, Val Staples, and Tyson Wengler. Just to catch you up, if this is the first time you're tuning in, what's been going on in the Top Cow Tomb Raider Journey series up to this point is there was a spear known as the Dream Spear. It was stolen from the British Museum. It had been on loan from another country. And apparently Laura knows the Prime Minister. Tony Blair, I think, is who it's supposed to be. I don't know that it's ever explicitly stated. But anyway, he enlists Laura to go and recover the spear. And the hunt has taken her to the Australian outback, woods of New Zealand, the Maori Indians, true owners of the stolen spear of a Dream Spear, I should say. I almost said Spear of Destiny, but no, it's the Dream Spear. So issue 9 starts, and Laura has discovered a tribe of the Maori, and she states how they're very dignified. They have an amazing culture. They welcome her sort of with open arms, and she tells them about the Dream Spear and her quest to find it, both for on the behalf of her people who had it stolen, and on the behalf of the Maori, who originally own it. So they take Laura to see the Council of Elders, and the elders through their being elderly, I suppose, their elder powers, if you will, they open up a scene portal or, you know, kind of a conduit into the dream world that allows them to see. And they see that the spear is in the hands of Kagan, who's a character we've seen in the series before, who's crossed paths with Laura several times. And one of the elders says it's very dangerous for Kagan to be where he is in possession of the spear. And Laura kind of feels responsible because she feels like there were times where she could have stopped Kagan previously. As I said, they'd crossed paths. And Laura says, well, I have to go there and recapture it. And the members of the tribe say, no, we can't let you go. It was your people who lost the spear in the first place. And one of your kind is carrying it without our permission, destroying the balance between the dream world and the real world. They're saying she's not a member of the tribe, so they can't let her go. And then one of the members of the tribe say there is a way in which she can enter the dreaming of the underworld and not break the laws of their people. And several of the tribe's members say, no, we know what you would have her do, and it's too risky. Another one just keeps saying over and over, it simply isn't done. And Laura keeps asking, what isn't done? What do you mean? And Akio talks about giving her the moko, which is the tattoo. A lot of the tribesmen have tattoos all over their body. And Akio says, yes, we could give you the tattoos temporarily. They will fade with time, but they would allow you to travel to the dream world. But again, there are other members of the tribe saying it simply isn't done. It's too risky. She's not a member of the tribe. And another of the members says that if she wins by right of combat, I will be her guide. And, well, that's what Akio says. And another member of the tribe says, I will be the one to fight you. And Laura makes sure to stress that it's not a fight to the death. She refuses to fight to the death. So she fights, and of course she wins against the tribal member. And, there's a couple women from the tribe who bathe her and then tattoo her. Actually it's, two of the high priests that tattoo her after the women have bathed her. And they give her a traditional tribal garment looking thing. Not really a garment, it's more like a bikini, because, you know, Tomb Raider and 90s and Top Cow. And so with her guide, Akio, they enter the dream world. And Akio mentions, hey, just remember these tattoos or moko will fade with time. And we have to make sure that you're out of the dream world before they fade. Otherwise, you'll be trapped there forever. And they enter the dream world. And there's not really a passage of time. Laura states how she doesn't get tired. She doesn't get hungry. There's no sense of days passing because the sky is always a pale shade of green. And she doesn't necessarily feel fully awake, but she doesn't feel tired. And they're on this journey, on this quest, and they ask spirits along the way. Some of them are able to point the way and help, and others just kind of ignore them, basically. So they feel like they've been following this trail for hours without fatigue, no hunger, no pain, even when things got dangerous. Apparently they have to fight at times. And then they finally stop for a rest. There's a fire. Laura is asking Akio if she has any idea why Kagan might have stolen the spear. And he responds, he has no idea what your people would want with it, and asks Laura straight out if she knows him. And Laura, this is where we get the idea that she feels responsible. She says, sort of know him. We've crossed paths on more than one occasion. Something inside me feels partly responsible for what's happening. And Akio asks why. And she mentions that last time she saw him, she left things unresolved. He was tied up, but she didn't make sure that he was arrested for his crimes or, you know, brought to justice, I guess you'd say. And so she feels responsible. Laura mentions there's something else that's been bothering her. She feels like she's met Akio before, but when she tries to think about it, it's like trying to hold a sliver of ice in the palm of her hand. And Akio says that the world of dreaming doesn't hold on to time. He says if you think about the before, the after, and the present too closely, the lines will be blurred and you'll basically lose your mind, so don't do that. And then Laura hears a sound, says, what's that? Akio says, stay here, I'll see. And Laura, of course, says, no, I'm coming with you. And they see some figures wearing robes traveling in the distance. And Akio thinks that they're heading to find the dream spear themselves. So he wants to confront them to see if they have any information. And they say, you know, it's none of your business. You don't have any authority here. So Akio, of course, Braun Before Brains jumps in. There's a fight. And lo and behold, one of the people bearing a robe is Miles, who I am not familiar with, don't remember him being in the series previously, but he recognizes Laura, and Laura recognizes him. And then it says to be continued. So as I said, this issue was a lot better than the previous issue and the one before that as well. I almost feel like last issue was a fill-in issue. Wasn't particularly good. So this issue, it moves pretty fast. The pacing is very quick, but not so quick that I feel like anything's missing. There are times in the past where we've read some books of the Top Cow Chronology where I flip back and forth on the pages several times because the book just took such a big jump. That's not the case here. The pacing is probably the strong suit of this particular issue. There's a lot of action. It is a little bit wordy, tends to be a little heavy on the exposition, but again, that's just a little bit of a product of its time. I did enjoy the story. I feel like this series is progressing. And as I said, there are times in the past where the series has felt like it wasn't progressing and we were just treading water. And I have a feeling even if I were to read this entire series in one sitting in like a trade paperback, let's say all 12 issues, that it would be very choppy. I don't know that it lends itself to that. It could be paced a lot better, but that's not a complaint I have for this issue. As I said, I feel like the pacing is done very well. If anything, Akio is a little two-dimensional as kind of the strong-headed warrior type, I guess you'd say. But at the same time, that is softened a little bit because he was on Laura's side right from the beginning when she showed up for the tribe to ask for their help in finding the spear. So I guess in that way, that redeems him a little bit. The art is pretty solid by Manny Clark. I don't know that I've seen his art before. It's not the best rendering. Again, much like the series itself, it can be inconsistent at times. But there are certain images, like the splash page with Kagan, that's done really well. There's another splash page where Laura's getting the tattoos that is a little cheesecake, but is also interesting. And I do enjoy his designs of the moko, the tattoos. So all in all, the art is really solid. I think it's definitely helped out a lot by that team of creators that handled the colors, led by Brian Buccioletto. And also the team that did the inking, Marlo Alqueza and Sal Regla, they did a bang-up job too because very clean lines. So no fault with the art, really. Just there are times where the perspective is off a little. But overall, I think the art is done well. And I think that the page layouts, the panels on the pages themselves, are done very well, very pleasing to the eye. Manny Clark definitely uses different perspective, you know, as far as the angles of the panel, zooming in, shots from far away, changing the perspective, that keep it interesting for the eye. If anything, sometimes just his figure work, some of that looks a little wonky. So that would be my only complaint about the art. But definitely a solid issue. So that leads into issue 10. Let me read off the creative team before I dive into the book itself. And again, this picks up right where 9 left off. So once again, written by Fiona Kai Avery. Manny Clark is the penciler again as well. We have Marlo Alqueza, and this time she is joined by Rick Basaldúa on inks, and the colors in this issue are solely by Tyson Wengler. So as I said, this issue picks up right where 9 left off, and Laura is trying to stop Akio from attacking Miles. She says, "No, Akio, Miles, it can't be you. You died in my arms. How can this be?" And Miles says, "Good Lord, look at you. You've gone all native," because, you know, Laura again is in the tribal bikini and the moko markings on her skin, the tattoos. He asks about his gun. "I left it with you for safekeeping." Laura says, "I haven't gone native. I just use this as a way to travel to the dreaming world because I'm still alive. And you know, the reason that I left you in the first place was because she wanted to do things on her own and never appreciated it." Basically, they just start arguing back and forth on who left who, and eventually they kind of break out in laughter because they realize just how ridiculous they are. One thing that did bother me that I did notice wasn't really explained is Miles was in a group of people. There was at least like six of them, and they're never the other members of his tribe or not tribe, but group, I guess you'd say, that he was traveling with. They just kind of disappear and they're not mentioned at all. So I don't know if they just kind of ran off or, yeah, not sure. I mean, Akia was trying to get information, and I guess one getting information from one would be just as good as any of them. So I guess because Laura knows Miles, he figures maybe I can get information from him. But I don't know. I just thought it was weird that the rest disappeared and that they're never mentioned again. Anyway, after the laugh, the arguing and the laugh, and them both realizing that neither one of them has changed a bit, Laura's trying to get answers like, you know, you're dead. How are you here? And he says, I thought that would be clear since I presume we're both here for the same thing, the dream sphere. Some confounded idiot brought it into the dreaming underworld, and it's a perfect opportunity to seize it, which Akio says, no, the sphere belongs to my people, and I won't let another take control of its powers. But Miles wants the spear because apparently through using the dream spear, he'll be able to bring himself back to life. Then there's a flashback with Laura. Apparently she was in some trouble at one point, and she basically put herself in a crate and shipped herself to Miles. But unfortunately, the trouble followed her. And I don't know if that's what led to Miles' demise or not. But she certainly feels somewhat responsible for his death, even though they both state that the death was an accident. So while Laura is thinking about that flashback, some dream minions show up, some minions of the dream spear, and Akio, who has a spear himself, and Miles, who has a short sword, fight them off. And Laura feels useless and helpless because she doesn't have a weapon herself, and she repeatedly asks them, where can I get a weapon? How did you get those weapons? Miles, you know, where'd you find the sword? And he tells her that there's much about the dreaming place that she doesn't know, and it's too much to try and tell her in a short period of time. She needs to accomplish her mission. But Laura said, doesn't answer her question. And Miles says, I know where you're headed with this argument. I'm not sure I'm ready to tell you yet. And meanwhile, Akio says, actually, you should tell her what she wishes, old man, or I'll destroy you on the spot. And Miles is not going to stand for that. Basically, the two guys are just getting a fight, male egos and all that. So again, a little cliche, a little of its time. And then Laura basically gets between them, says, stop it, I command you. Why were those spirits after us? And Akio says that those minions were recently created by the spear. So Kagan's probably using the spear to send the dreaming forces out against them. It's not safe to travel open any longer. And again, Miles asks Laura about a weapon, his gun that he left her. Laura says the gun and all her worldly possessions are back in the real world. You know, she didn't bring anything with her. And Akio says, actually, we've been traveling toward the Dwelling Springs for you to find a weapon of power all along. But now that there's a chance of further attack, we're going to travel by the song lines. And apparently it has to do with some spell that he can cast. And the next page is a giant double page splash of crags and lightning and blue fire coming up from the earth. And I don't know, I guess it almost looks like they're traveling through a dream world within a dream world. And eventually they stop in this craggy spot. Apparently they're still in that kind of song lines kind of place, and they try to get some rest, and Laura goes to Akio and I assume to ask about the weapon, and Akio says that he cannot lead Laura the rest of the way. It's her destiny to find the weapon on her own. But he does say, you must know one thing, if at the critical time you think you've been betrayed, you must not rely on your own senses, you must rely on faith. That is a world that operates from the heart and not the mind. Laura says she doesn't really understand, but she thanks Akio for his device and continues on her own, following the song lines to her destiny. So the next page, we see Laura climbing, and then we see a giant chasm that separates two of this craggy landscape. And it looks like there's kind of a bridge made of blue light, very thin bridge of blue light stretching across. And as Laura is crossing, some figures show up on either side of the bridge with bolos. They start throwing them at her, and she manages to dodge and fight. We get a closer look at the figures, and they appear to be these cat-like warriors. So the next couple pages are Laura fighting, knocking a lot of them off the bridge, and, you know, just being typical Laura Croft. And across the bridge, she finds, it almost looks like a Stonehenge a little bit. You know, it looks like a circular spot with all these craggy stones coming up from the ground with a bright purple light in the middle of it. And as she's approaching, she hears a voice yelling, saying, "Miss Croft, it is you. I had my doubts when the reports first came in." And he holds this dream spear aloft and says, "Looking for this." And Laura says she's surprised that Kagan has the courage to show himself. And Kagan says that courage is irrelevant. As long as he has the spear in his possession, he can rule the waking world and the dreaming world and have anything he ever wanted. So he starts using the spear to hammer on the bridge that Laura is still heading across. And all of a sudden, Miles shows up and tells Laura to run. She runs, she jumps, she leaps, she just makes it. And Laura yells out, "Miles, don't, he's too powerful for you." Climbs up the rest of the way onto the other side and goes and reaches into the blinding light and relies on her faith and pulls out an invisible sword. It looks so invisible to me when she pulls it out. It's glowing with that purplish pinkish light. But then as she pulls it out, it does seem to lose that glow and does look like an invisible sword. And as she pulls it out, she hears a scream, and she turns around and she sees that Kagan has pushed Miles off the ledge on the other side of the chasm, and he seems to be falling into the abyss. And she yells out, "Miles," and we get another to be continued. So much like the last issue, very action-packed. The pacing wasn't quite as good. There were a lot of pages in this issue where it was just fighting, a couple pages where it's just fighting and there's no dialogue at all. And it makes the story go very quickly in that, in those few pages. So for that reason, it didn't feel as evenly paced. But again, the story's moving along really quickly. These two issues, they kind of went by really fast compared to the last, previous two. But there wasn't a lot to this issue as far as understanding anything that Kagan's role is. It didn't move the story forward in terms of learning anything about Miles or how Akio thinks that this weapon that Laura was destined to find will help in their battle. It's like forward momentum on their journey. Laura takes the next step in her mission to retrieve the spear, which is to get a weapon. And it seems like these three are going to be working together, but we don't get any progression of the story as far as motivations or any kind of plan for the future. So not as strong as last issue, but pretty solid. And as I said, a lot of action. Also, the art in this issue is done reasonably well. Again, I didn't enjoy it as much as the previous issue. You know, it is Manny Clark. Also, I feel like, and this might just be the books that I have, you know, I have digital scans, and the colors just didn't seem as vibrant. So I don't know if that's just the scan that I have, or if because it was just Tyson Wengler coloring this, if he chose to use more of a muted palette. But again, the strength of Manny Clark's art is the page layouts, so the way he sets up the panels on the page. Again, he keeps it very interesting, and yeah, it's a solid job. And I also one more thing about color. I don't mean to say the colors are bad. They're just, as I said, a bit more muted, and perhaps Wengler did that on purpose to kind of show that this is the dreaming world rather than the real world. So all in all, solid. I am kind of curious to see what happens next. There's only two issues left of the series, and I'm also anxious to finish off those last two, because then we'll get back to some of the regular Top Cow universe proper. So I guess that's going to wrap it up for these two issues. As I said, it did move the story forward some, but they weren't like groundbreaking, and there wasn't a whole lot going on. There's not a lot of depth to this story, at least in this particular part of it. as I said, because we didn't get, you know, a lot of motivation or reason or characterization in this particular issue. So perhaps once we find out more about Miles and why he wants to return from the dead, other than, you know, the obvious reason, or about Kagan's plans or motivations for stealing the dream spear in the first place, that might add another layer of complexity. But we might not. I mean, this is a 90s comic, so maybe it was just all about the action. So a little bit about where to find the books. I always like to tell you guys where you can go and look for them. Unfortunately, as I mentioned at the top of the podcast, Top Cow no longer has the license for Tomb Raider, so these aren't reprinted. And I've looked several times. I've never been able to find a trade paperback of these. If this series was collected, it probably would have been collected into one trade paperback or maybe two. But I've never been able to find that. So if I'm wrong, someone please let me know. And these issues, based on the quality, aren't terribly expensive. There are some of the Tomb Raider Journeys issues that have Adam Hughes covers. And those, just based on the Adam Hughes covers, can be tough to find and a little pricey. But these two particular issues, I don't believe, have Adam Hughes covers. And I know they have covers that aren't Adam Hughes. So if you're just looking for reader copies, I don't know that it would be too difficult to find. eBay is probably your best bet. Maybe Mile High Comics, maybe Midtown, or your local comic shop. If they do have the issues, they're not going to be particularly expensive, because as I said, it's not the most sought after series. So maybe at a local convention or the next convention you go to, you can take a look if you want to look for these and read along. Again, I can't really in good conscience tell you to go out, seek out these issues. They're so, so good, and have you spend money on them. But if you do want to find them, those are probably your best options, as opposed to a lot of the other Witchblade and Darkness and other Artifact books that we're going to be reading or have already read in the chronology that are available digitally through Comixology. Top Cow does bundles with Humble Bundle all the time, where you can get a ton of issues for a really, really, really low price, like 5 cents an issue or something ridiculous like that. But unfortunately, these, because of the issue with the license, these aren't usually included in those deals. But if you do want to know what's coming up after we finish Tomb Raider Journeys, I'll be talking about that on the next episode of Comic Source Presents the Top Cow Chronology Project. Or you can follow the link in the show notes, go over to Condor's reading order, and see for yourself what's coming up next. I can't think of what it is off the top of my head, and I don't want to guess at it. So as I said, I'll make sure to check up on that and have that info for you when we finish up the Tomb Raider Journeys series, which will be on the next episode. I'll do two issues in one once again. So I want to thank everyone for joining us. I do want to mention that Manny and I just did one of our favorite episodes of the year that we do every year, and that's the Best of 2017, the Comic Source Awards. So we just did that episode. It came out earlier this week on Wednesday, and we actually did that as an episode of our 9-panel grid podcast that we do exclusively for LRM Online. So you can go to LRM Online to find that. I also did put it up on the Comic Source website as well, just because it's usually our most downloaded episode of the year, and I wanted everybody to be sure to be able to find it. So take a listen to that. It was a whole heck of a lot of fun. Forewarned is forearmed. However, it is a pretty long episode, about 2 hours, hour and 40 minutes, because there was a lot to cover. So once again, I want to thank you all for joining me. Please go to thecomicsourceblog.com for all past episodes of the podcast. Do a search for us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. I'm always talking to comic creators on there, and you can eavesdrop and hear what's going on. Also do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram. We always post on both those places whenever there's a new episode, or we're going to be at a convention, or we post pictures from the convention and all that kind of stuff. So that's the best place to follow along there. And as I said, we're still doing our 9-panel grid exclusive podcast for LRM Online that comes out every Tuesday. And while you're over there at LRM Online, you can check out all their other pop culture content. They have a lot of podcasts covering movies, TV shows, video games, cartoons, just about anything that you would want to know about the world of pop culture. So be sure and check that out. They have a lot of written articles too. So be sure and check that out. And thanks for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you next time.